Let's look at RHI next. Another day of the inquiry and another bad day for officials from the Department of Enterprise, which oversaw the botched green energy scheme yesterday. Well, they might disagree that it's a bad day, of course, and some people might disagree with them. Yesterday, the inquiry heard how any of the most senior civil servants in the Stormont department were involved in watering down what ought to have been a blunt warning that the RHI scheme was out of control. Sam McBride from the newsletter, give us a sense of what happened yesterday.
Good morning, Stephen. Well, we had several revelations about what was going on within the Stormont department, which is running the scheme at the point where it ran out of control. This was the point where Jonathan Bell had just taken over from Arlene Foster as the minister, and he'd been there for about 2 months. And this was the first time that he was being formally warned that the civil service knew that there was a serious problem with the scheme, that it was running at double the annual budget, that was going to run then for a 20-year period. This was before the spike in applications. It got much worse than that, but they knew that there was an acute problem here. And what we saw yesterday was that there was initially a document drafted to go to the minister. It was very explicit as to the scale of what was going on. It gave him clear figures about that. And that was effectively diluted, I suppose, by senior civil servants who got involved in the drafting process. And what actually went to the minister was described by the inquiry chairman, Sir Patrick Coughlan, as false. Aspects of it were inaccurate. And really, he was not being given the full picture. That is only part of the picture, of course. We know that there are allegations of DUP people operating in the background in a separate train track, almost, what was going on here. But within the civil service, even aside from any of that, there was a significant difficulty here that the minister wasn't being told what was going on.
Let's hear from the inquiry barrister, Joseph Aiken, who asked Stuart Whiteman why official departmental officials were giving companies like Moy Park advance notice of the change in the RHI scheme's tariff. You'll hear reference to Mr. Kearns in this clip. He was the Deputy Minister, Jonathan Bell's special advisor at the time.
So you're just about to send the email to Mr. Kearns with the revised submission with the date now of the 4th of November. And even before that has hit the desk of, or the inbox of Mr. Kearns, and certainly before it has got the sign-off from the minister, Mr. Hughes, at your direction, according to his email, is telling David Mark from Moy Park now, you'd done the engagement, you'd explained it as engaging with industry at the start of July, and part of that rationale, as far as you were concerned, was the need to avoid challenge to the steps you were proposing to take. But at the end of August, any information that's conveyed is just bad news for the department in terms of the call on the budget and potentially further overcompensation occurring, further breach of the state aid. So why engage in this conveying of information? Now, it's not just Moy Park. Just after you send Mr. Kearns the submission, you sent it to him at 10:08. This is 10:05. At 10:22, if we look at 107221, the same email is sent by Mr. Hughes to UFU, to Mr. Forgrave and Mr. Osborne. If we go on 2 pages on, at 11:51, he's sending the same email. This is, in fairness, answering a question, but providing the same line to Future Renewables. I don't have to hand, but whether there was the exchange with Alternative Heat, Fergal Hegarty, and then his dissemination of the information, but can you explain the rationale for giving advance notice of the public announcement of the date of the scheme change to these interested bodies? Now, this isn't necessarily them coming to you and you having to respond. You're actively telling them.
Still here sitting today, you know, I'm going to say this, I'll be perfectly honest, that the people that we went back to here, it was firstly at that stage really a courtesy thing. We had told them something back in July based on the best of our knowledge, and that was changing. Except we could have waited for the ministerial announcement. I think it was just we felt there was a courtesy on us, and I can't remember, were we forced to had somebody contact us in the first instance, and then once we'd given that, we felt like a courtesy to give it to others. But it looks naive now when I look back, and I accept that.
So just a declaration here. Stuart Whiteman, who you heard there answering the question, sat beside me in my class in school. But what on earth is going on, Sam McBride? A courtesy thing. So this is ahead. This is advance notice being given to Moy Park. Why did they deserve or were entitled to advance notice? And it's not just Moy Park got it.
That's a question which the inquiry were trying to get answered there and at various other points. And I mean, I think for most people listening to this, they will find that pretty remarkable. What at a separate juncture we heard from Mr. Whiteman was that one reason why he was giving out information to some of these people in industry was that he thought that at least maybe it would stop the phone ringing for a while, because they were getting so many calls about this and they were stretched in terms of staff resources. But, I mean, when you think about the millions of pounds of taxpayers' money that was at stake here, at another juncture he clarified that he knew that there was millions of pounds of taxpayers' money at stake here. It really seems remarkable that courtesy or a desire to stop the phone ringing or any of those sorts of reasons would really come into it. And Una O'Brien, who's on the panel, who's a senior civil servant from Whitehall, she said, really, why could you not just say to these people when they phoned, there will be a verdict on this once the minister has taken it. And that is the situation. You will not be getting any more information from us until that happens.
Sam, if you can stay with us, we will look at what Damien has said after the news. But very briefly, is this before the minister had actually taken the decision?
It was. This was 3 minutes before the piece of paper which was asking him to take the decision had even gone to his special advisor.
So they were giving a heads up to Moy Park about something that is going to happen because it's costing the country money, and they're giving them a heads up before the minister has been able to take the decision.
Moy Park essentially knew the decision before it had even been taken. I mean, that is pretty Orwellian, I suppose. But, I mean, they seem to be in a position where they commercially are able to benefit from this, and the civil servant doesn't seem to think there's any difficulty with that. It's a courtesy thing.
So we're just in the middle of talking to the newsletter's Sam McBride about some of the evidence uncovered by the RHI inquiry yesterday. I just want to say this one more time, Sam, to make sure this is right. So are you telling me that at the point at which the civil service knew that there was a damaging overspend and that as a consequence that the lucrative tariffs were going to be closed down, is it actually the case, Sam, that what the civil service then did was give these big companies like Moy Park a heads up so that they could get in and cost the country even more money before the lucrative tariffs were abolished? Is that what they did?
Well, certainly they gave them the heads up. Why they did that, whether they had full knowledge of what the implications of that should have been, I suppose, is something for the inquiry to look at. But should they have known that it was very obvious that somebody who had a big financial stake in this, who had been coming to them over a period of months and warning really the department that there were going to be hundreds of applications coming in from their suppliers for these boilers, really, should it not have been pretty obvious to somebody in the department who understood the figures, who knew how grim it was, that really there was a difficulty here? One of the issues which came up yesterday, which touches on this, is that during this period over the summer of 2015, the budget, which had been breached by that point, suddenly was increased, and that seems to have lulled some of these civil servants into a false sense of security, that this was money which was going to just increase according to demand, that it was going to be paid for by the Treasury in London, not out of their block grant in the Stormont. But that is something which was challenged by Keith MacLean on the panel, where he asked them, hang on a minute, is it not the case that that made no difference as to whether the scheme was value for money? It was clearly overcompensating. You knew that. You knew there was a difficulty. Were you saying that effectively it was okay to do that, so long as you weren't paying for it? And that is one of the most significant questions, I think, at the heart of this inquiry. Who was paying for it? And did that influence how the politicians and the civil servants viewed this scheme?
So to put it in ordinary punter's language, the gravy train is departing. Jump on board as quick as you can.
Well, we know from other evidence from a private email which was compelled by the inquiry from Andrew Crawford, Arlene Foster's former special advisor, that he viewed it in pretty much those terms. He thought there wasn't a difficulty here. He thought that London was paying, and therefore he couldn't really understand why other people were panicking. The allegation, of course, is that he was involved in trying to delay cost controls. He denies that. That's something which will be teased out over coming months. But there was certainly, among some of these most senior figures in this situation, there was this belief that it wasn't coming out of their budget. And it was the moment at which they realised it was coming out of their budget later that year that they all seemed to have really seriously panicked, and that was where they tried to close the scheme.
And that's Andrew Crawford you referred to there, OK, who was a DUP special advisor at the time. The last time I looked, the DUP, you know, they believe in the United Kingdom. So why would Mr Crawford not be as concerned if it is an overspend from the wider United Kingdom rather than just a Northern Irish budget? It's either value for money for the United Kingdom or it's not.
That's right. And that is a particular political difficulty for the DUP because they're a unionist party. I think there is less of a there would be less of a political difficulty for Sinn Féin if this was the situation. I'm not saying that is how they would necessarily view it, but I think that some of their supporters certainly would be pretty relaxed at the idea of getting as much money out of London as possible. Arlene Foster has made a series of speeches over recent months where she has stressed her pan-UK unionism. We're all in this together, for better, for worse. We stand together. We take the good times and the hard times. I think it's difficult to square that with some of what's going on here, and I think this feeds into a sense among some people, whether unionist or non-unionist, that some people in the DUP really have a unionism which is more of a Ulster nationalist flavour, I suppose. It's about getting as much money into Northern Ireland as possible, trying to really milk as much as possible out of whether it's Europe or London or wherever, rather than maybe having a broader focus on this. But certainly from the civil service point of view, that ought not to be a consideration at all. But it's something which David Stirling, the now head of the civil service, has suggested was something that was in their consideration at a very high level, that if there's money available from Westminster, you try to spend as much of it as you possibly can. And there's a very obvious conflict there, because if the priority is to spend as much of it as you can, is it then contrary to that priority to try to rein in a scheme which is spending as much as you can? I think that is one of the difficulties which the inquiry is trying to get into here.
And finally, Sam, Joseph Aiken, the inquiry barrister, he asked Mr. Whiteman if the department, if the civil service was leaking like a sieve.
That's right. And I mean, it's very clear from all that has come out that it was leaking like a sieve. It was leaking from the civil servants, primarily, I think, over a period of months to the Ulster Farmers Union, to Moy Park, to individual boiler companies, to some individuals who just phoned up the department. The civil servant, Stuart Whiteman, who was there yesterday, said at one point that he wanted to be as open and honest with stakeholders as possible. On one level, that's a laudable idea, I suppose. But the difficulty here is that the picture that emerged yesterday was that they were being as open and honest as possible with industry, with people who had a commercial interest in this. They weren't being quite so open and honest with their own minister, who was meant to be taking the decision. He was meant to be the ultimate decision maker. These weren't meant to be decisions for the civil service. They were meant to be things which would be taken by the minister, and therefore he would be accountable for them. And I think that is one of the difficulties here. And I think in a wider sense here, if you are looking at this inquiry as a private business in Northern Ireland...
I think we need to be careful, Sam, about about suggesting that there was no honesty from Mr. Whiteman to the minister. I don't think we have any evidence to suggest that.
I'm thinking, I suppose, just in the terms of the submission which went to the minister, which Sir Patrick Coughlin said had details in it which were false, which was altered. Certainly, that's just part of the picture. But certainly,
I think Mr. Whiteman has described those as mistakes, though, rather than an issue of honesty. Can we agree on that?
Okay, well, I'm certainly not saying that he was dishonest, but I think the wider sense, I suppose, you get is that people who were phoning into the department were getting information in a pretty straightforward manner a lot of the time, and the minister wasn't necessarily getting that. And I suppose the issue here, and what one of the questions which he was asked yesterday was whether this was an isolated incident or whether it was part of a culture in the civil service. He didn't suggest that this was the only time that this was happening within government in Northern Ireland. And I think the difficulty there is that if you're a private business in Northern Ireland and you're not in the habit of phoning up government departments and really pressing or pumping civil servants for inside information and what's going on with a policy or a scheme or a subsidy or whatever, you're potentially missing out. And that really fundamentally undermines the idea that government operates on a level playing field for everybody. It actually creates difficulty for government, because going back to the start of this, where the civil servant said that the difficulty here was that really their phones were ringing all the time, you actually create a rod for your own back potentially, and a shrinking civil service in terms of the number of civil servants in Northern Ireland. If it is seen to be the case that you phone them up and you get this sort of advantageous commercial information, you can see how that creates a very difficult situation and is open to all sorts of other difficulties.
Okay, Sam McBride from the newsletter, thank you very much again. And the inquiry website, if you want to look at the totality of yesterday's evidence, rhiinquiry.org, or of course the BBC News Northern Ireland websites where you can get more information.